Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to another episode of the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossworth, and joining me, as always, are my wonderful co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So, I watched the Hateful Eight trailer yesterday, and then I woke up this morning, and I have a massive mustache on my face.
Yeah. Kurt Russell does that to you.
It just grew overnight.
Yeah. It was just Kurt Russell testosterone. Like, yeah. It's just like through some kind of weird visual osmosis. Like his mainly
those plasma TVs, right? They just do it to you.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I watch on there and, you know, it was like, you know, on Santa Claus with Tim Allen, whenever he shaved, his hair just came back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
can you imagine if you had a 4K TV?
Gosh.
You would have a Santa Claus beard.
I would be wearing a fur coat right now alongside that mustache from the Hateful Eight.
That fur coat would just be your beard.
Yeah. Wait, I should watch that trailer again and see if it actually is.
Yeah. Make sure it's in HD. Let me good. Did you see the Hateful Eight trailer?
You know, I actually haven't seen that trailer yet, but it, as chance would have it, today in the car, I was having a long conversation where me and two other dudes were just listing Kurt Russell movies, essentially because we wanted to.
That's a good way to pass the time.
We were just sitting around like Kurt Russell came up in conversation. We were talking about this podcast and how we mentioned Kurt Russell a lot, and they're like, what movies is Kurt Russell in? And I'm just like, well, here's a bunch of them. I started listing movies, and they're like, what about this? I'm like, no, not that, but this. Yeah.
Did you give a detailed plot synopsis for each movie you listed?
No, I mean, I'd say like Tango and Cash. And they'd say, what about that other movie with Sylvester Stallone? I'd be like, no, Tango and Cash.
Right.
Say, What about Cliffhanger? I'm like, no, Tango and Cash.
You know those movies, though, that you have where you don't get in depth about any movies? You're like, hey, man, you see Stargate? Oh, dude, I love Stargate. You see Tango and Cash? Yeah, dude, I saw Tango and Cash. You see Tequila Sunrise? Dude, I saw Tequila Sunrise. Did you see Death Proof? Oh, dude, I saw Death Proof. Did you see Art of the Steel? Oh, yeah, man, Art of the Steel. That's a real good one, man. Did you see Overboard? Oh, yeah, I saw Overboard. Like, have you ever had those conversations?
Yeah. This was that conversation.
Yeah, and like, you don't get in depth about anything, like Captain Ron, bruh. And then you're like, Escape from New York. And then the guy's like, Escape from L.A.? And then you're like, Big Trouble in Little China.
Right.
Escape from Big Trouble in Little China.
It's like you guys are on the same wavelength. Like, there's no need for further, you know, discussion.
It's like when you see somebody and give them the head nod, and you don't have to say hi. Everyone just sort of gets it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was almost like playing a game, though. It was kind of weird because one of the guys really was not into movies, but he was really into trying to guess Kurt Russell movies accurately. And the other dude really, really likes horror movies, but not so much general film. But again, really enthusiastic about trying to think of Kurt Russell movies. Like, he didn't see Captain Ron, Stargate, Soldier, Tango and Cash. Like, most of the movies I could list, he hadn't even seen. But he was still having a ball trying to come up with these movies.
Right.
Well, dude, sounds you're like forgetting about Miracle.
Yeah. Yeah, no. We don't need to say anything else.
Nothing Miracle. Says badass like Kurt Russell throwing a printed out roster on the floor.
Yep, this thing is breaking down on us.
Yeah. So, Levin Good. The Horror Corner is on the road this week, right?
Horror Corner has moved from the bottom corner of the United States in South Texas over to the middle of the East Coast in Maryland.
Yeah. So, what's Maryland like? A lot of Kurt Russell fans?
Evidently, I was in a car filled with them, and they hadn't even seen his movies. They were still fans. I don't know how that works. I don't know. Like, if someone mentioned some French actor that I hadn't heard of, and they're like, yo, Jean-Pierre, I don't know, Devereaux. I'm just picking that because it's a Van Damme last name in a movie. But Jean-Pierre Devereaux, like, you like that guy? I'm like, I don't even know who that is. They're like, well, let's guess some movies. I'd just say no. Like, I don't know his movies. I'm not going to try and guess his movies. Was he in Bloodsport? No. I don't know. Was he in Hateful Eight? No.
Are you talking about Jean Dujardin from the Artist and OSS movies?
I don't even want to talk about this. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, that's what my answer would be. I'd be like, Kurt Russell, who's that? Like, why are we naming movies?
So the good thing about this hotel room is tonight when we're talking about all the horror films, man, if you get scared, all you have to do is kind of move your head to the left and to the right like an oscillating fan, and you can see if it's all clear, right?
That's right. I can see the whole place. Well, actually, the bathroom is kind of around the corner.
Okay.
So that's a little creepy. Like, I got to get up, go all the way around to the bathroom. It could get creepy.
It could go, who's there?
Just, yo!
All right, gentlemen. I think it's time to start our podcast officially. And like we do with every podcast, it's time to start with listener questions. Lemongood, I think you got the listener questions this week.
I do. And this week, all of our listener questions came from my very enthusiastic horror fan and childhood friend, Brett from New Jersey, now in Clearwater, Florida.
Is that his full name?
Anyone who listens who knows me perhaps personally might know Brett because we grew up with him, but he's now out of Clearwater, Florida. He's a big fan, big proponent on the Nightmare on Elm Street Facebook page. He even posts one of my reviews there. But
sorry to stop you there, Lemongood, but I think it's kind of weird that, like, I've grown up in Florida my entire life, but it's really weird how many people I know who are from Jersey. Like, they moved to Florida from Jersey. Like, it's a really high amount.
We're all trying to escape our childhood nightmares from Friday the 13th Camp Crystal Lake in Western Jersey.
Sorry to digress.
We're just trying to get the hell out.
There's just something weird I've noticed. It's like, why have all these Jersey people moving to Florida?
And you don't meet many Philly people, do you? Like, there's not many Philly people. It's a lot of Jersey people.
Yeah. Well, not like I'm – no, I'm not going to say that. I don't want to alienate our Philly
listeners. I mean, even Dude, Where's My Car, like, they make fun of, like, New Jersey, and they like to pick Hoboken. And, like, other movies, they make fun of New Jersey. Like, Northeastern movies, they make fun of New Jersey. So I guess, you know, when people can, they want to get out. Yeah. Sorry to all my New Jersey friends who are listening, who live and die in Jersey, but
– Hey, I did like Garden – I did like Garden State, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
Dude, I watched Wish I Was Here, and we'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. On a Jersey podcast.
So Brett from Clearwater, Florida, he provided me with a laundry list of questions, and I just picked the first three that he shot at me for today's podcast. And his first question is, does anybody in the world know how many nails are actually in Pinhead's skull?
So the second I heard that question, I started thinking about who put the pins in there. Like, is it – he's from hell, right?
Like, it's sort of hell. It's kind of funny. In the later movies, they refer to it as hell, but in the later movies, Clive Barker wasn't involved anymore. And in the early movies and in the short story, they refer to the labyrinth, which is just some – an afterlife of desire that is linked to – torment and pleasure somehow simultaneously. So it's very abstract.
So when they go down Jersey. To this area, do they, like, have a guy that does their piercings?
Well, so in the Hellraiser mythology, there is a god of this hell-like dimension, and the god is Leviathan.
So he pierces everybody?
And he's the lord of the labyrinth. And I don't know, but in Hellraiser 2, there is literally like a TARDIS-like evil phone booth that this dude gets forced into when he wanders into hell after the puzzle box is opened. And it's like a transformation chamber where he gets inserted with tentacles and barbed wire, like, tightens up around his face. And I'm assuming that Leviathan was, you know, operating this evil TARDIS.
Does he have, like, a little train conductor's cap?
So he looks like the puzzle box floating in the sky is what he looks like. It's kind of weird.
Right.
It's cool. It's really cool. If you watch Hellbound Hellraiser 2, You'd be like, this Leviathan thing is very weird, but it's very interesting and cool.
All right, so I'm guessing 130, because that's what I read online.
So I actually looked online, too. I found all sorts of answers. I found one answer that was 138.
Wait, and so did somebody actually, like, watch these movies and count?
It was on Yahoo Answers, Lazabeth. So, like, honestly, you could go on Yahoo Answers right now, post that question, and write 176. And that way, in the future, when someone, like, looks it up, they'll find 176.
You know what I love? Some guy posted, he's like, just for fun, how many are there? And there's one comment, and the person just went, I don't know, probably about 90.
Yeah.
I saw that. I saw that, too. So I actually pulled up a lot of images of Pinhead's face, like, kind of close up, from the first two Hellraiser movies on a Google image search. And I found a couple good pictures where when I counted and I went down the center of his head and then I counted the grid going all the way across his jawline and to his ear and then it like arcs up to the top middle of his head, I counted 45 on one side excluding the center line. So that means there's got to be at least 90 plus the center line, which is about 100, just on the front of his face, like his ears and forward. So I think 138 is pretty reasonable.
I mean, you know how there's bad tattoos? Do some of these Cenobites get bad, like, you know, jobs done? Because if that wasn't symmetrical, people would be making fun of them.
You know, it's funny you say that, because if you look at pictures of Pinhead up close, you'll notice that, like, you know how it's kind of got a grid, like graph paper, and the nails go in at the intersections? Well, there aren't nails at every single intersection. There's certain parts around, like, the delicate parts of his face, like the soul patch area under the lip, where there isn't one. There are a bunch of places where there isn't one. So, like, even though they're putting nails in his head, like to torture him, they're like, no, I won't put one here. That would really hurt.
Yeah.
But these other 138 nails that are being hammered into his head, those are fine, but like right underneath the lower lip, that's going to go through to his teeth. That's excessive.
That just seems like a lot of work for torture, because they really had to draw a grid.
So the guy who's putting
face
in the pins, he was like, "Nah, man, I don't want to mess up your future soul patch."
So, when I was just looking this answer up, I came across something that I thought was totally ridiculous, and that's that this one person says, like, "Well, in the first two movies, they were pins. And in the later movies, they were nails." And I'm just sitting back like, dude, what? Like, are you really bringing that up? Like, I just want to know how many there are. And this is what you're bringing to the table. I assure you, no one cares.
All right. So I'm thinking 135.
Oh, okay.
135.
So you're going I'll settle.
I like 138 that I saw. I'm gonna stand by it without really knowing the answer.
I'm gonna price this right, you 11 good, and go 139. There we go. Yeah.
139. The luxury of being the new guy on the Price is Right. You get to bet last.
Yeah.
I will say this. I don't care if they're pins or nails. If someone replaces them with thumbtacks, I'm gonna be pissed.
Yeah. It's not as menacing, a thumbtack, compared to a long rusty nail or a long pin, right? Like, a thumbtack just seems very,
like, well, they're like nice,
pragmatic.
They're like nice stainless steel, like, nail pins or whatever. They look good. Like he just got them from Home Depot.
Yeah, and thumbtacks come in different colors too. So can you imagine, like, Hellraiser, like, if Pinhead had, like, different colored thumbtacks?
It's like this map you have when you're in college of like the places you visited and the places that you want to visit, and it's color coded in different colors.
Oh gosh, and his head is used for that.
All right. I think, guys, do you think that question has been slightly answered?
We partially slightly answered it, but I still like the idea of a colored thumbtacks on Hellraiser's head so that you can tell where he's traveled.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our second question again from Brett from Clearwater, Florida is, when Charles Lee Ray was in the toy store in Child's Play, what would have been his second choice of toy if he had never picked up and possessed a Good Guy doll?
Cabbage Patch Kid.
Dude, you took my answer.
I mean, it's the 80s.
Because if he picked up a Cabbage Patch Kid and, you know, like, it would get a little corrupted from his dark soul, I feel like you'd get the first Garbage Pail Kid.
Yeah.
And it would be him just going around murdering people. It would be like murdering Matt or something, or murdering Murdoch.
I think he would have been in a, you know, he would have seen that. He'd have dove right for the ugliest Cabbage Patch Kid. And I think, yeah, I mean, that probably would have been just as frightening. Yeah. Were there really Chucky dolls like that?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
At some like good guy good dolls, there was something like that. It wasn't called that.
That would be cruel to make a toy like that. And then that'd be cruel to make a movie. I think that's mean to make a movie like that. You have all these little kids who can't watch R-rated movies, right? All these toys. And then they watch this movie one night because their older brother's a jerk. This didn't happen to me. I'm not, like, doing a full story. But, like,
sure.
I feel bad for these kids. Like, now they're never going to want dolls. Well, I guess every horror movie's done dolls. But,
Well, you never found dolls kind of creepy? Because I always did.
See, yeah. I never had them. I remember my parents told me that they got me a Cabbage Patch Kid, and they said I just looked at them with indifference.
Yeah. Well, I had a sister growing up, so I had my
dolls.
And like, it was creepy because, like, their eyes were always open and they were always smiling. It was just like, God, quit looking at me. Quit staring at me.
There were those dolls where, like, if you angled them, forward, like, if you angled them with their head forward, their eyes would open. And then if you angle them back, so they're straight up again, their eyes would close. Have you ever seen those dolls? Like, they had them. So, like, if you pick, like, it was going to sleep if you angled it a certain way. And I swear to God, I remember as a kid seeing one of these dolls at one of my friend's house. And it's like someone, like, just set it down. And it's like it must have ever so subtly shifted, like, a millimeter and you couldn't tell. But I saw its damn eyes open and it creeped me the hell out. Like, I was old enough to have seen horror movies and to know it's not real. But I was also old enough to realize that's such a weird coincidence, and it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like, I pushed the doll back. Like, I was angry at that doll for that coincidence.
What a jerk.
How cool would it be to, like, find a doll that looks just like a good guy doll or something? Like, I mean, exactly like it.
Like a Kurt Russell
doll. And give it to a kid. Give it to a kid. The kid has it for a few years. And then have that kid, like, when he's 12, watch Child's Play with you.
That's a long-term con, dude. Like, you're putting like, this is, like, year, and you should see Johnny's nodding his head with a big grin on his face.
No, wait, okay, ready? You sweeten the deal. You also find the Annabelle-looking doll, right? And you give that to a different kid, like, whatever, 6 months later, like, stagger it a little bit. So that way, like, 6 months after, you get the big reveal for the good guy doll, and that kid's scared to death.
Wait,
for the rest of his life. Then you give someone else the Annabelle doll, that show him the Annabelle movie after you gave him the Annabelle doll years before.
This sounds almost creepier. You're just giving random kids dolls, waiting years, and then watching scary movies with them.
Mark, I'm just saying that, you know, one day you might have a child, and when they're like five, I might give them an inobtrusive, inoffensive-looking toy. And because I know the weird horror movies and you don't, like, you'll just think, oh, that's very sweet of John. Like, you know, not really Uncle John. And then, like, years later down the road, like 10 years later, I will show them the movie of that evil monster.
Gosh.
So I'll be like, you guys go have a date night. You and the wife go have a date night. You'll be like, oh, thank you. When I'm, like, visiting, stay with whatever, not really Uncle John. And then we'll watch that movie and your kid will be whiter than a ghost when you come home.
This is like
the long con.
13 years from now.
Oh, he's already got a mark on his calendar.
Man.
Yeah,
I'm a patient man. You know how it takes me 2 weeks just to, like, finish a horror movie review. So this is not really a big commitment for me. Lazabeth, what do you think about Charles Lee Ray? If it wasn't a good guy doll, what would he find in that toy store?
I mentioned it earlier, but I think I like the idea of a Kurt Russell doll.
Oh,
like, it's,
you mean like an action figure with a kung fu grip for Big Trouble in Little China?
No, like an actual little doll. It's got like a little mullet. Comes with like an eye patch if you want. It has like a sleeveless tank. It's wearing like jeans.
So like it's one of those like 2 foot tall like action figures?
No, it's like an actual doll.
It's like a good guy doll, but yeah. Kurt Russell.
Yeah, you could never be scared of that thing.
No, and no demon could overtake a Kurt Russell doll.
Exactly. Monster on your bed? Kurt Russell's on it.
Yeah, Kurt Russell's fighting those things.
Oh, no,
you're sleeping.
Like,
you're...
He'll probably get like knocked out and like someone else will end up saving the day.
Yeah, another Woody and Buzz come through and save the day.
Yeah.
It's like that evil poltergeist clown. No problem. The Kurt Russell doll has it in a sleeper hold.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you wake up to a scary noise and you're like looking around with a flashlight worried you're going to see like the evil clown doll looking at you and then it's going to leap at you. Instead, you're like, you hear this sound of a bell jingling and it's because like it's shaking, trying to get out of the sleeper hold in the corner of the bedroom. And Kurt Russell just gives you a thumbs up. Like,
I got this, Timmy. No, I got this.
How about this? The monster slowly come to your bed and the Kurt Russell doll just like nod your head. It's like, I got this, bro. And then like you just throw him at the monster and Kurt Russell just lands on him in a sleeper hold. Ah,
you just wrecked my youth because I want one of those.
Yeah, I know. I want one too now.
Oh my gosh.
Is it too late?
And he's just battling evil demons in your room. Remember that like old Ultimate Warrior plush dolls that they used to do? Like,
yeah.
Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. And then yeah. they jump in it.
Oh man. Is it do those build a teddy bear places? Do you think they would make a Kurt Russell teddy bear?
I'm going there tomorrow. All right.
I'm going there tomorrow.
Let me know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't want to risk it, man. Like, if I like Kurt Russell that much that I was even thinking about this business, I've seen some bad teddy bears come out there. I don't want people screwing up Kurt Russell left and right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want bad Russell.
Yeah. Bad Russell bear.
Oh gosh.
Okay.
So these happen to be horror questions, and that normally means that our theme is not going to be horror. But today is extra special for the horror fans because today's theme is in fact following suit with our questions.
Yeah. Well, we were gonna do legit. We were gonna talk about Nicholas Sparks films and posters and movies and all that because I've broken down all the posters and fights and movies. But since we did, yeah, John, lead us into it. Levin, good, lead us into it.
Well, yeah, so Mark had asked me some questions, and this was just casual on Facebook. He says, what do you think are the best movies, the best horror movies of the 21st century? And, you know, I don't know, like, what do you want to do? He said, well, ask your Twitter people. So we started putting questions on Twitter and Facebook, and where we normally just expect a few answers from a few big fans given lists, we got, I want to say, 100 or so responses, and people start bickering and saying, The Shining, no, that's not this century, that's the last century. And before we knew it, you know, Mark kind of got the impetus to do some research, and Mark came up with a very, very big list, and I found it pretty interesting the way that he went about it.
Yeah, and so basically we had this idea, and I was thinking about collecting lists from people, but I'm like, I can't collect that many lists because – that's just so much data. Who knows if people will come through? So what I did was I collected hundreds of – I sorted through hundreds of 21st century horror films. I collected the list of probably the top 160. Then I broke down their Rotten Tomato critic score, Rotten Tomato user score. And then I got their IMDb score. And then I got their Metacritic user and critic score. So I tallied five things together. And then to add that, to help that list, I went to Bloody Disgusting, Bloody Good Horror, all their websites, and I collected their best of the years and best of the centuries, and I put it together a list that would go separate of that. So I kind of put them all up into a spreadsheet, and I broke down like what the critics like, what the audience is like, and then I combined them all into what was the most popular, and I unleashed it on Tuesday, and it's been a pretty good runaway hit for us. That's why we're talking about it tonight.
That's true, yeah. And, you know, before we get into the particulars of the list, I kind of want to just skim the surface of what we'll call the theory in picking your favorite horror movies. And, like, Mark, for example, he gave his list of his top five favorite horror movies of the 21st century to introduce this notion, and not too much detail was gone into. I mean, we had The Thirst, we had 28 Days Later, The Descent were among these five. But, I mean, how do you just pick, Mark, five movies when there are so many different flavors of horror out there?
I don't think I ever sat down and intended to do five. But when I think of my favorite horror films of the 21st century, these five come up without effort. And you know me, I like to have like – I don't like to force too many things. I like things to be kind of organic. And so with me, I felt like these five weren't – you know, I wasn't like I need a top 10 and I just threw a couple in there. You know, I was 100% certain about these being my top five. Does that make sense?
So makes sense.
Number one is The Descent. I think it's a primal beautiful, dark, tension-filled movie that, you know, it freaks you out long before the creatures are even, you know, in the frame. And it's just a beautiful women spelunker badasses versus these creatures that are just primal and mean and just want to eat you. And then my second one was Drag Me to Hell, which was the first movie I ever watched with my wife. So that kind of adds to it. But I also love Sam Raimi's style of it's bonkers. And there's like, it's just the story of a girl who gets gummed by a gypsy and gets cursed to go to hell. And in the process, she staples a gypsy in the face, kills a cat, and then there's a demon goat. It's just a bonkers, beautiful film. The next one is I Saw the Devil, which is a Korean film, which is like kind of like a Korean slasher serial killer film. But what I'm telling you, watching it felt like a 10-mile hike up a mountain when it's raining and mudsliding. And it's terrible when you're doing it, but when you think about it later, you're like, that was amazing. And I think about I Saw the Devil, and it's one of the most haunting, well-acted, well-made, push the boundaries of it. Everything about it, it's like people talk about The Shining and those kind of movies, and it reminds me of those beautiful films in the 70s with like Rosemary's Baby and Alien that had, you know, they were exorcists. They had these big themes, but they were done so well, and that's why I Saw the Devil is there. My next is 28 Days Later, which I think, you know, refreshed the zombie genre. I can't, you know, whenever I hear a song from that soundtrack, I remember it. There are shots that linger in my memory. I think it's haunting. I think it's groundbreaking. I think it's just a truly visionary horror film with some of the scariest moments you'll ever see. And the fifth one is Thirst, which is one of the most haunting, well-shot, beautiful Korean vampire films you'll ever watch. And, you know, Roger Ebert loved it. And he had a quote about it that I really like, and let me find it. What did he say? He said Roger Ebert talked about the director of Thirst, and he said Park Chan-wook of South Korea is today's most successful director of horror films, perhaps because there's something always more than horror to them. So that's, you know, I like these movies because they're all sort of hybrids. There's more than horror to them. They're fun, they're gory, they're primal, they're well done, and I don't know, I think they're all very well done, and that's why they're my favorite horror films.
So I'm going to agree with the Thirst that actually, you know, it was clearly a horror movie through and through, and yet it had a great dramatic forbidden love story that turned into a dramatic normal love story, if you will, albeit distorted through a horror lens. And then that same – the thing that spurred the romance then turned into the seed of – what you'd think was a perpetual vampire's life of resentment, and it ends on such a bittersweet, spectacular note. But yeah, that movie is powerful for many reasons, but I'm wondering, because I haven't seen it, I Saw the Devil, would you fairly call that a horror movie? Is that actually filled with terror, or is it filled with shocking violence and suspense?
It's full of terror, shocking violence, and suspense.
True terror.
I know. Okay. True terror. I mean, there are scenes in these whole – I don't want to give anything away if you haven't seen it, guys, because this is terrible serial killer, and you are just – he goes after the nicest women, and you just feel this dread, this terror. And it devolves into this really weird, like, you know how Thirst kind of has, you know, it's very Korean in a way, and that it kind of goes in ways you wouldn't expect it, and it kind of has these curveballs. But I would absolutely say it's a horror film. And going through all the lists, I mean, almost every major horror fan site calls it a horror film. So I mean, it's kind of like, I think it's more bleak and violent than Seven, and I think it has like violence on the line of The Hills Have Eyes with like, you know, cannibalism and death. So I think it's a very hybrid horror film.
Okay, that's fair. Now, how do you feel about other movies that I know that a lot of these movies that I'm about to mention, this kind of ilk, are going to find their way into your lists. So like Pan's Labyrinth, I think that's a good example, because that's clearly a dark fantasy movie. It has monsters that eat children that are scary. But I mean, is this really horror, or is this R-rated dark fantasy?
So here's I'll answer that. But the reason why I added that into the list is I literally went through hundreds of films, and I added Pan's Labyrinth because it is a dark fan, and I love it. On the message on Reddit, on AV Club, on their Facebook page, on AV, you know, AV Club shared it. I mean, people are like, Pan's Labyrinth. They're like, it's a dark fantasy. Then some guy brought up the definition of dark fantasy, and there's like fantasy with horror elements involved. So this movie features a child-eating monster. I think there are elements of terror and horror, and I do think that dark fantasy has horror elements. And in all the horror movies that I've been writing about, a lot of them are not horror in the traditional sense, but they become these hybrids that feature that. And I think that's the way a lot of our cinema is going with these horror hybrids. But if you look at Rosemary's Baby, a lot of these movies with like yuppie cultists, there are elements of you know, devil worship and all that, but it's like a drama almost, but that's considered a horror. So I look at dark fantasy as being horror, featuring horror elements.
With a movie like Labyrinth, which has a much more mild rating, a baby is kidnapped by the Goblin King's denizens, and when the big sister tries to recover her baby brother from the Goblin King, played by David Bowie — this is an 80s movie, by the way, folks — the goblins literally try to kill her.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if Ernest Scared Stupid was in this a 2000 and up, I would have added it. You know, I do think that there are movies that have horror elements. But see, the problem is, this is why I collected so many movies and I did so many lists, is because let's say you go through this list. I gave, you know, like on the website, you know, I gave 1 through 50 on each. So if you're looking through it and you're like, Pan's Labyrinth's not a horror, then you can go down 2. So I gave everything I could into these lists, and I gave the spreadsheet, which you can find on the website, of all the horror movies. So, I mean, if you disagree with one movie, just go down the list and you'll see the next ones in line. So sure. I didn't want to – and I knew people were going to kind of nitpick about that, but in my head I was like, I'm going to add more than enough than not enough. Because, you know, I sent you guys a thing on Facebook earlier – where it's like the most talked about horror films. And I got the link here and I'm looking at it now and it's like Black Swan. It's here, let me pull it up right now so I can take a look at it. We got Black Swan, What We Do in the Shadows. Let's see, what else do I have? Shaun of the Dead, I Saw the Devil, Under the Skin, Barbarian Sound Studio, Zombieland, I watched that ESPN commercial. Yep. So there's a lot of movies in here that are black, you know, like I said, Black Swan. So it's really hard to define Tucker and Dale versus Evil. It's hard to define horror when all the major horror websites and all these other places are saying that these films are horror.
Well, it makes sense because horror these days is really subjective. One person finds scary, another person might find comedic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so tough. That's why I added so many movies. That's why I look through so many to add them to this list. And, you know, I was expecting more complaints, but like on Reddit, you know, that you normally get like, you know, or AV Club, which is very pithy, or you get like, you know, we put it on Dreadit and it actually did really well. And a lot of people liked the list. I mean, there were some minor complaints, you know, snippy comments, but for the most part, I think people appreciated the huge collection of horror films.
You mean there were a few contrarian, argumentative people trolling around on Reddit? I am shocked.
Doesn't sound like the internet I know.
Fine debaters on Reddit.
But what I was amazed at is a lot of people were like, great list. So that's like what kind of motivated me to keep pushing it. And that's why I did so much research. I once compiled 256 action movie posters to check if explosions mattered on movie posters. So, I mean, I covered all my bases. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you mention back at Reddit, you know, Reddit, and also on the website, even when AV Club had put it on their website, there are a lot of antagonistic comments, and people will write things like, well, I thought you meant the last century when you wrote the 21st century. There are people who just aren't reading very carefully, and they clearly just want to be snippety and sound like they're clever making some criticism when it just shows that they didn't read the paper.
Yeah.
And other times they say things like, well, why? How do you not have The Shining or Evil Dead 2? It's like, well, it says the 21st century, bro. Did you read? Why'd you include Mulholland Drive? Well, because I said that I combined these lists and, you know, like, give me a break, buddy.
Yeah, and it's tough with Mulholland Drive because I think it was IndieWire that did a top 25. And I'm sorry if it's not IndieWire, but they put Mulholland Drive as number one. So I'm seeing this and it's like, well, wow. You know, that's number one on their horror list. So I'm not like, that's why, like you said, horror is very subjective and I kept a very open mind and I just chucked in everything. So if you don't like one, go down another. So just kind of, you know what I mean? Yeah,
I certainly disagree with some of these a lot more than others. Pan's Labyrinth, I was just bringing up more for the point of debate and intrigue. But like Mulholland Drive, I, for instance, feel has no business there. I think The Gift belongs there a little more than that, but it still doesn't belong there in my opinion. But a lot of times, you know, you got to just include what other movie fans are calling horror.
Yeah.
Because if you're making a horror list and you don't put it, you're going to get criticism from them saying, why didn't you put The Gift? Why didn't you put Mulholland Drive? That was great. And
yeah. So what you're saying, and then I have a good buddy, Zach, who loves Mulholland Drive. He thinks it's the best horror movie. Like he's a horror director. And he loves Mulholland Drive as a horror movie. So it's like I going into this, I knew I couldn't really win. So I just added everything. But I, you know, there are some things I obviously left out. But I think in the end, I think the research and the audiences and the critics and the horror websites, they kept to a certain string of films. Like they kept to about like a certain 10 between the horror critics, the general critics, and the audiences. I think there was like 10 movies that rose to the top. So
I'm just curious now. I saw your analysis, and it turns out that Pan's Labyrinth, which I used for my example, was in fact number one overall. And now, of course, huh?
Yeah, overall on all three lists.
Right, all three lists. Now, granted, I mean, if The Remains of the Day was in this list with Anthony Hopkins, if we were to include it, it might find its way there. So it doesn't matter how many people consider it horror at this point. Just understand this list. It's just that we included it as a horror movie, and then you took the ratings, and it ended up at number one. But what do you think impact that this has? Because we know that 10,000 people or so have seen this list in the last 3 days. And if they're going to look at one thing on this list, they're going to look at who's at number one.
I think that's great because I think it's original. I think it's visionary. I think it's done on a budget. And I think it is a fantastic film. So if people go out of their way to watch Pan's Labyrinth now, I'm happy.
And I'm going to say that Doug Jones monster with the eyes on its hands that eats kids, that thing really was creepy beyond reason. I'm not trying to argue that this didn't have some tremendously powerful horror elements.
Yeah, I mean, let's support original, you know, like I think that the 10 of all the critics. So the top 10 of the movie critics were Pan's Labyrinth, The Babadook, Let the Right One In, It Follows, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, The Host, Drag Me to Hell, Housebound, Trick or Treat, and What We Do in the Shadows. And these are all very original. I mean, even if a lot of people don't like them, at least there's something new and they're like, you know, even if you don't like it, at least it's something that you haven't maybe seen before. It's a new spin, like Housebound put a new spin on the, the house genre. What We Do in the Shadows played beautifully on vampires. Trick or Treat was a nice anthology. It Follows played like a De Palma film, met Wes Craven and spawned something completely original. So I think all these movies, I can see how they are all top 10 critic wise.
Now,
so
that's concerning your approach and taking the average scores of like all these critics' ratings. Do you think that list kind of skews away from how scary a horror movie is and just towards like in general how good a movie is? Because like a movie could be bad, but could also be scary at the same time.
Oh, yeah. This is not a shit your pantsometer by any means.
No. I do think you're right, but this is going to sound weird, but I think the critics, they go a little bit more towards originality, and they gave some movies that the audiences didn't root for. They gave them better ratings, like Battle Royale at number 14. That's a ballsy flick. Trick or Treat, you know, Trick or Treat didn't show up this high on the audience list. So I think their list is almost more like hipster. Does that make like it's more? It's more boutique, like it's. But these are good movies that are on this list. But I do think it's. You won't see more of the terrifying. I don't see any movies here that are straight up bloodfests. There are blood spatters. I would say the most bonker one is probably Battle Royale in the top 20. Yeah, I would say that's the craziest.
In the top 10, I mean, Let the Right One In has its bloody scenes, but the gore is limited to blood. That makes it easier to watch for most people, I think. And
what is it? Drag Me to Hell. That movie is utterly disgusting, but it's almost never blood.
Yeah.
It's embalming fluid. It's vomit. It's saliva. It's vomiting a dead cat. It's everything but blood and guts, as it turns out. But it's every bit as gross.
Yeah.
Just terrifying in nature.
But you know, it's funny though. There are a little bit of differences, but the critics and audiences still generally think alike on their top films. So I don't know. For the top 20 rated horror films with audiences, I'll do the top 10. So this is audiences from IMDb, Rotten Tomato audience score, and Metacritic users. It's Pan's Labyrinth, Shaun of the Dead, Let the Right One In, The Gift, The Devil's Backbone, What We Do in the Shadows, American Psycho, Zombieland, Black Swan, and Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
Yeah, so I mean, there we get something that sticks out to me is What We Do in the Shadows. I thought that was brilliantly hilarious. The story's, I guess, sort of original in notion, but it's not going to make me think at all. And So I guess I'm not as surprised that wouldn't be on the critic list. The same goes with The Gift, the recent release, The Gift. Like, it was very well done and well acted, but the story is something that I've seen 10 times on the Lifetime channel.
Well, What We Did in the Shadows did 10 on the critic list and 6 on the audience, so that's not too bad. And there was that really bloody scene where he killed that lady and blood went all over the newspaper.
Yeah, and what else? Like, Shaun of the Dead is on the fans' top 10, but not the critics' top 10, and I don't think that's surprising.
Oh yeah, people.
The users and audience top 10
It made 12 for critics. But I mean, I guess there's some more chances in here. You got some American, you know, fans. You know, they kind of, you know, like the Boondock Saint type movie. I think they were drawn towards American Psycho. Grindhouse was a big crowd favorite. Then we have Tucker and Dale, Frailty, which was really cool by Bill Paxton, was number 16.
Underrated since it came out. I think that movie's amazing. Everybody listening, watch Frailty. Everybody listening.
Yeah, and Bill Paxton is just he's a good dude. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know. So that's how I got these things. So I got the top 20 on that. And then, but I mean, it was kind of fun to see the differences. I didn't get too many complaints. I guess I got some people saying... I got a decent amount of comments letting me know that which movie, what should have been much higher? Oh, Slither. I got a lot of people saying Slither should have been higher up.
So if we were ranking movies somehow by pure fun factor, like I'd want to kick it up there. It's more of a Drag Me to Hell fun fest.
Yeah.
In terms of grossness and oh my God, did you see that kind of effects?
It was the R-rated Drag Me to Hell, pretty much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
it did have a beautiful line though, where Nathan Fillion's drinking. He's like, I can't get drunk. I have too much muscle mass.
Yes, too much muscle mass.
Speaking of getting drunk, I think now's the time for to take a break.
Right. Sounds now. Good.
Quick, I'm gonna right. Commercial break.
I can't though. I have too much muscle mass.
Right. We'll see you guys in a little bit.
Hey y'all, it's Mark, and for you, the listeners of Movies, Films, and Flicks, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, there's a book that I really recommend to you guys, and since we've been talking about horror films tonight, it's a book called Shock Value, How a Few Eccentric Outsiders Gave Us Nightmares, Conquered Hollywood, and Invented Modern Horror. It's a wonderful book. It's about 9 hours long, but it walks you through how Alien, Halloween, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, how the classics were made, Rosemary's Baby. And if you're a fan of horror, if you're a cinephile, and if you're just a fan of classic cinema, I totally recommend Shock Value. It's a wonderful book by Jason Zinnemann. Totally recommend it. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark for your free audiobook.
Oh, Kyle, isn't this great? We get to take a break from all the podcasts that we've been doing through sharkdropper.com.
I know, it's wonderful, and you even sprung for the free Wi-Fi on the bus.
I love touring the countryside.
You didn't even reference my Wi-Fi joke.
I didn't have Wi-Fi.
Sorry, guys. Do not go in the bathroom. I was listening to the new Snubbed episode in the bathroom, and I just couldn't help myself.
Where at? In the bathroom?
Hey, guys?
Yeah, guys, this is great. Well, we got Robert, Kyle, John, Jonathan, and me here, but...
Who's driving the bus?
Wait, I thought...
You were, right? Or
no.
Me?
I came back to talk to you.
Who's driving the bus?
Welcome back to MFF. Guys, are we drunk yet? Or no?
Oh, yeah. I got into the ectoplasma.
So you didn't have too much muscle mass.
I wanted to get another beer, but they're all the way down in the hotel lobby, and it was too far. Speaking of which, guys, I am on a work trip in a hotel, so if I ever get a little choppy, just know that I'm fighting the good fight from Maryland instead of Texas for you.
And then if I had a couple more beers, I'd go into Mitch Brewski mode from my old band, the Brewskis, and I would start singing some of my old hits, like "A Vampire Drank My Blood and She Got Drunk."
I'm going to go down and get a beer when we're done from the lobby, and then I'm going to play your song because we're just going to pretend that I can find it on iTunes, and I'm going to sing it drunk in my hotel and get horror complaints. And they're going to have to kick the door down, and it'll be me in my underwear holding a beer singing Mitch Brewski with Hellraiser on the big screen TV.
Oh, gosh.
And the lights off and some strobe light is going or something.
All you got to do is go to iTunes number one. If you start singing it in your hotel room, you're just going to gather an audience. I mean,
iTunes and click most popular and not music, not movies, not podcasts, just the most popular anything on iTunes. It'll be you.
Yeah, everything. The Brewskis.
Sounds like a fun Thursday night. Really?
Yeah, exactly. Dude, you're gonna be throwing couches out that window.
That is officially the most fun anyone has ever had, Frederick, ever, if that happened. Yeah. That's right. Where I am. It's not fun here.
Levengood, you have our final listener question for today, right?
That's right. Way to cut me off with the Maryland bashing. So,
wait. Donnie Brewski is in Maryland right now. So we love you, Maryland.
Yeah.
Donnie, give me a text. We'll hang out. Our third question, again, from Brett from Clearwater, Florida. Brett has given us a lot of questions today. His third franchise from the 80s or 90s that he is questioning us about. What happens if you have your eyes closed when you say Candyman's name three times in front of the mirror?
I don't think it works.
I'm pretty sure that they outline in the movie that it doesn't work, but I remember being a kid, and the same thing goes with Bloody Mary. We're like, this really might have happened to a lot of you guys listening, where like you're 12 or 15 years old, and one of your friends says, look, I know that ghosts don't exist, but go in the bathroom and shut the door, turn out the lights, stare in the mirror until you see the whites of your eyes, and slowly say Bloody Mary three times. And most people are just like, I know nothing's going to happen, but I'm not going to do it. it's kind of a freaky idea, even though in your deepest heart, you know it's like, or let me rephrase, in your brain, you know it's not going to happen, but there's somewhere in your soul you just don't want to mess with that.
You don't want to go looking for trouble, really.
Oh.
It's why I always avoid Ouija boards. I'm just like, no.
Exactly. I was actually going to use that example. I was going to say, do you believe in Ouija boards? You'd probably say no. But if I put one in front of you or mailed you one, you would burn that shit.
I'm booking it. I'm like, no way. Get that thing away from me.
You guys didn't hear my story, did you?
No.
Oh, man. It was a few years ago, and I went to this like really dark club in a basement in New York. And it was one of those really, really dark clubs. I heard the music was good, so I was down there and saw the lights were off. And I got to the bar. I had to, like, fight to the bar. And it was one of those bars which was just, like, all windows along the back. And, I was feeling a little rough, so I figured, you know, I'd order a Bloody Mary to wake me up. So
wait, windows or mirrors?
Oh, I'm sorry, mirrors. There's mirrors by there, you know, like, by the bar. And since it was really busy and the bartenders were really busy and it was really loud, as the bartenders would walk by, I would go, Bloody Mary! And they would miss me. And then another one would go by, Bloody Mary. Another one would go by. And then I just went, Bloody Mary. And I saw Bloody Mary. And luckily, she killed the hipster next to me by accident. And I just got out of that bar.
By all of this craft brew questions.
So, yeah, never yell Bloody Mary in a dark, crowded bar that has mirrors, you know, right in front of where you're standing.
Unless you hate hipsters, then by all means, scream Bloody Mary.
It's like, I only use dollar bills minted before 1980 because I don't believe in the taxes that we incurred to print new bills after that year. And then Bloody Mary's just
Bloody
like,
Mary.
Oh, to hell with this guy. And then after Mark says it a second time, and she's like, oh, he said it twice. And then she just hears that hipster, and you see her. It's like someone scratching a chalkboard. You see her face. She's like, oh, did you hear what he said? And he's like, is that beer brewed within 100 miles of here? Because I only drink local brew.
No, 6 miles. 6 miles.
Six here. Miles. Only extreme local.
I wonder if that's a phrase, extreme local.
Is that brewery publicly traded? If it is, I don't want it. I want the other one. And Bloody Mary's like, that's it. Stab in the face.
I was going to get that tall Swedish guy, but I'm going after him.
Let's let him go.
I mean, I don't think she would just go after hipsters. I think she'd go after whoever annoyed her. You know what I mean?
So hipster.
Do you think that the rules are any different for Candyman versus Bloody Mary? Like, they say it's the same in the movie, three times in the dark, right? Like while looking in the mirror, but... Like, do you think there's any actual difference in application?
No, I think it's the same thing. Yeah. I think they're cousins, Bloody Mary and the Candyman.
Do you think that when you say their name, but three times, but you're not? What was my exact question now, Brett? Like, three times in front of the mirror. What if you have you don't have your eyes closed. Your eyes are open. I didn't even know your eyes had to be closed. I got that backwards. But like, what if you weren't in front of the mirror?
Nah.
Like, do you think Candyman, like, he knows you're saying his name, his ears are burning a little bit, but he gets a vision of you and he's like, ah, crap, he's in the living room. No, no dice.
I mean, do you think that Oculus mirror knows that you're talking about it when, like, when
that
you're...
Oculus mirror knows everything.
It's so if you're at, thing. Like, if you're at, like, Papa John's and you're in line waiting for a pizza and you're just randomly talking, that mirror can still hear you?
I think so. I think that mirror knows. I think that mirror has you believing you're in that restaurant when you're not. You're actually just in the living room staring at that mirror.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of Candyman going, shoot, he's in the living room.
How was Oculus not in any of those top 20s on your lists?
I mean, I ask the critics and audiences. I have the breakdown here. Don't come at me, bro. Don't come at me. Here, let me pull up the score, because on the I have the PDF right here. But yeah, Oculus is a fantastic film, but I think it ranked like in the top 50 maybe of a lot of things.
Oculus like got a 60 in your overall.
Oh really? Yeah, here I'm going down.
Speaking of 60 as an overall, I can't help but to notice that maybe, gosh, we've become such a critical generation, but there are not a lot of super high scores when you look at the overall scores assigned to your top 20 overall horror movies. Like Pan's Labyrinth is really high. It's like 96 or something. But as you move down just 5 or 10 steps – Things degenerate pretty rapidly to like 80.
Are we talking critics or are we talking
overall, all criteria combined?
Now on IMDb, the average score is 63 for all movies. So, I mean, a lot of these do fall. Like a lot of these top movies fall above that. I'm telling you, like horror is not for everybody, and so I mean. All right, so you're a movie critic, right? And you get out of – or you're an audience member, right? And you get out of Oculus and you immediately go on your phone and you're bummed out and you give it 2 stars. You know, you've already rated it, but you think about it later and you're like, oh, that was pretty good. I think it's a very reactive genre. I think it weighs heavily on people. So I do think it is more sometimes like a reactive – you know, like a lot, like I saw The Devil. I could barely like move after I was done watching it. It was like a week later when I loved it. So I think – you know, I do see where negative reviews come in.
Well, Trick or Treat, 58 overall.
Yeah.
By the metric that you chose. And this isn't a fault of your metric. This is critical fans. I mean, because all over the place on Reddit, you see people raving about Trick or Treat and all sorts of, hey, they're remaking Trick or Treat. What's your favorite horror anthology? What's your favorite movie in the last 20 years? Trick or Treat's all over the place. This is not a minority speaking.
Yeah, but if you think about it, it is a very vocal, small group that loved that movie because it wasn't in the theaters. It got spread around on DVD and it became like a very niche audience. You know, people who loved it, it became like a family. So they defended it. So they take every chance they get.
So that's a good lead-in to an interesting point that I have, and it links to what you said. So I picked to kind of – this isn't like a statistical test of your metric or anything, but I was curious if there was a bias with an increasing bias of the number of reviewers for newer movies. Because if a movie came out in 2001, not most of the people doing the voting didn't have the internet in 2001, at least not regularly. And these websites might not have been popular even then. Mm-hmm. So I figured maybe they have fewer votes for older movies, or maybe they have more because they're older. I don't know. So I picked 7 movies from 2001, 6, 7, 8, 9, 2013, and 15. And I looked at the number of critic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, the number of audience reviews and the ratings, if you will, and the number of IMDb ratings. It turns out that out of all those movies, Trick or Treat had by far the fewest in all three categories. Trick or Treat only had 30,000 ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, whereas Pan's Labyrinth had 631,000. Devil's Backbone was low at 34,000, but a Spanish Mexican release. Let the Right One In, 58,000. Drag Me to Hell, almost 1 million. The Conjuring, 153,000. It Follows is new in 33,000, but Trick or Treat had the fewest views or reviews by a landslide. Only 21 critics. The next smallest was Devil's Backbone with 117. Only 57,000 on IMDb. The other movies ranged from 141 to 417,000. So even these ratings on these websites were like a quarter in total of the other movies that I happened to randomly pick for this metric. I picked Devil's Backbone, Pan's Labyrinth, Trick or Treat, Let the Right One In, Drag Me to Hell, The Conjuring, and It Follows. I figured it was a pretty random mix.
Yeah, are you saying, but of course the numbers are going to differ because some of these movies were wide releases that hit the theaters and others were not. Others did not hit the theater. So, of course, there's going to be a smaller number of critical reviews and less eyes on it.
Yeah, but The Devil's Backbone came out in 2001. People weren't putting in their ratings right after it came out. Same with Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
2006, I wasn't even using IMDb then. And yet it has 417,000 reviews. Well, Trick or Treat, even if it doesn't have a lot of fans, it has the fewest ratings. And yet those fewest ratings still only generate rated a 58. That's why I ask, are we really just so cynical?
Yeah, and I mean, I have a question. Do you think Trick or Treat is a movie just for horror lovers? It's a weird little thing, and it's an anthology. It's cheekily told. It has a lot of personality, but do you think that it's a movie for the mainstream?
No, it's a movie for horror
I think it's
lovers.
As much for the mainstream as Creepshow.
What are you saying, Lazbeth?
No, it's a movie for horror lovers. I mean, you're not going to pull in the Avatar crowds with Trick or Treat.
No, probably not.
No blue people. No dragons. Why is this kid wearing a burlap sack?
It's not in 3D.
Yeah, it's not in 3D. But, I think a lot of people, there were previews for Trick or Treat, and then it didn't hit the theaters, and they kind of disappeared. So out of sight, out of mind. But now, lately, with Netflix and all of that, you know what? Is it still on Netflix?
I never even knew it was on Netflix.
Let me see what the Netflix score is it, because that's where a lot of the audience has come from. So I'm going on Netflix, and I am typing in. I was going to get Amazon and Netflix scores, but I'm like, that's going to kill me if I do that.
So I think it's very good you didn't use Netflix scores, because I'll tell you, when I rate on Netflix, I rate everything a 1 or a 5.
Yes.
And the other thing is that even if I liked a movie, if I know I don't want more like it, I rate it a 1. And if I hated a movie, but I do know I want more like it for my weird suggestions, I rate it a 5.
Yeah. So you don't.
So
use
my
the,
ratings aren't even consistent with liking it.
You don't even use the not interested little option that they have on Netflix?
No, because I want it to give me more or not. Like if it's a student film, mm-hmm. I specifically don't want more films like that just in case it's choosing based on that.
Wow. All right. So Trick or Treat has is 80% on Amazon as 4 out of 5 stars.
Oh yeah. Amazon viewers. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, 61% of the people. So
these are people that like it and are ordering it. So that's why I think that's higher. Like, these are people that have gone to this website that probably buy it and want to do that. So I don't know. But yeah, so let's move on from Trick or Treat to the critical and audience movies, the top 10, as we'll call it. So these were the top movies from Rotten Tomato Critics, RT, Rotten Tomato Audience, Metacritic Critics, and Metacritic Users, and IMDb Users. So those five, so I repeated myself.
This is all criteria that you had evaluated, yes, combined and averaged.
Yes. So okay. Pan's Labyrinth, Let the Right One In, Shaun of the Dead, Devil's Backbone, Record, I guess. But see, Record didn't have a Metacritic score, but I still put it in there. 6 is What We Do in the Shadows. 7 is The Gift. 8 is The Loved Ones, which did not have a Metacritic score. 9 is Black Swan. 10 is Zombieland. And then I'm going to add Babadook is 11 and Grindhouse is 12. So, I mean, there are some familiar faces. Pan's Labyrinth, Let the Light One In, Shaun of the Dead. You know, What We Do in the Shadows pops up in there. Zombieland, Babadook. So, you know, no matter how different these lists are, there's still some differences, but there's a lot of similarities in them as well.
I noticed one very significant difference between the critics and user/audience scores that were combined to give the list that you just gave. Mm-hmm. And that is that let me find my notes. Just in the top 20, which is presented on the website, in the top 20 – the critics included 7 out of their top 20 films from your criteria. 7 of them were specifically from either 2014 or 2015. So they were from the last 20 months, not even 2 full years. Whereas the audience and users scores, the top 20 movies on the list, only 2 of them were from 2014 or 2015.
Interesting. Really? I will tell you, and I have written about this, I do think 2014 and 2015, there have been about, there's been about 20 films that have come out that have average, like if you combine their scores, they are 90%. I don't know if that's like a recent thing, but I do think we are in a very good time of horror. And I genuinely think that there have been some very good films released in the last 2 years. I mean, who knows if they're going to be classics, but critically, I can absolutely see how the critics would have those in their lists. So, I mean, movies like there's what? The Guest, Backcountry, It Follows, Spring, The Conjuring, Creep, We Are Still Here, The Babadook, Honeymoon, Housebound, The Taking of Deborah Logan, Cheap Thrills, Under the Skin, Dead Snow, Red vs. Dead, Oculus, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, Only Lovers Left Alive, What We Do in the Shadows, and Tusk. Their average was 87%, and so take out Tusk, which was 39%. But I do think that we are in a good time for horror. So that for me, I was kind of thinking about the years when things came out, but I was also thinking that's really hard to gauge because there are some very good films, and there were some lean years in the 2000s. So maybe we are going through somewhat of a mini renaissance, but we're going through a boom time of hybrid horror.
Do you think so? Do you think it's because these horror filmmakers, their sense of horror is maturing, or is it the audience, what they expect or perceive a horror movie to be, or is it a little bit of both?
I think we're taking people who grew, you know, a lot of these directors are our age or younger, and I think they're taking what they loved of horror and making it their own. And I think they've learned, and I don't think what. Sorry, but I don't think these movies are reactive. I think they're proactive. I think they're just telling stories. Like, you know, when Paranormal Activity came out, they made copycats. Or when Lost came out, there were copycats. I think these are just original stories that kids wanted to tell, and they're finally able to tell them now with digital photography and editing and Netflix and all these different venues to watch them. Did I answer your question?
Slightly answered it.
All right, wait. Yeah. Give me the question again. Yeah. Give me the question again.
No, I forgot.
I mean, that's a valid answer, period. These are not easy questions that we're kind of tossing around about the generalities of horror, if you will, in its present state. But, I mean, the gift, though, the gift is in that list. I don't know if I'm the only one who saw The Gift. I'm going to maintain that this is like a Lifetime movie, and that if The Gift was marketed to a movie company 10 or 15 years ago, it would have been released in 1,200 theaters tops. It would have been treated as a sequel to The Stepfather almost, like, and it wouldn't have had these great writers behind it. And if it did, people would be wondering why. I don't know. I feel like movies are getting a chance now that wouldn't normally, and this would normally never find its way into horror, but because it got made in a big, studio picture, and it has some jumps that are better than they would be on Lifetime Network, they're calling it horror.
But I don't think The Gift was a big movie. It had like a $5 million budget, which is, I mean, that's smaller than the third Insidious, which is still—
It doesn't matter about the budget. The fact is that it had Joel Edgerton and Jason Bateman in it, and they expect to make money on it.
Yeah, but I think Joel wrote and directed this, and he has written before. So I do think this, you know, maybe he's had this script in his mind for a long time, and he's been waiting to direct it. So he finally got the clout to do it. I haven't seen it, so I hate generalizing.
Did you say that Joel wrote and directed this?
Yeah.
Joel Edgerton?
Yeah, he wrote and directed it.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So and he's a good writer. He worked on The Square. He was credited for a part of The Rover. I think he's a very talented man. And I think, you know, all right, let's say there's a movie, right, that you watch and it does exactly what it's supposed to do. All right.
Which this did.
Yeah. So it's the Corolla, you know, like it's a very reliable. You're not going to go, this is crap. You're going to go that it was a successful film at what it was. And I'm going to give it a B+. So obviously, you know, that's going to show up on Rotten Tomatoes as, you know, positive. People walk out of it. It made $12 million opening weekend. No one expected that. So word of mouth is out there.
Wait, did you just call The Gift a Corolla?
Yeah.
Like a Toyota Corolla?
This is – I know it's insane, but like
it, – I had it's a Toyota Corolla. I love that car.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's going to run forever. It's reliable. It does what it's supposed to do. It's
cheap on gas.
Cheap on gas, yeah. And it hits the right beats. Uh-huh. It's easy to maintain. So I think maybe, you know, don't kill me for that because I haven't seen the movie yet. But that's the way I'm looking at it. That's why I think a lot of the scores are really what are solid for it right now.
I just feel like, you know, 15 years ago in Blockbuster Video, I wouldn't have found this in horror. I would have found it in that genre that doesn't really exist anymore called thriller.
Yeah, the death of the thriller might be the reason why so many movies are being lumped into horror.
I would have found Mulholland Drive there. I would have found Black Swan there.
Wait, I have a question, though. But The Fly, do you consider Fly to be horror?
I do, yes.
Yeah, it's even more horror than sci-fi.
So, I mean, she's kind of – Natalie Portman is kind of becoming – something else. So her body, you know, if she feels her body changing in certain shots, and like there's a lot of like I don't know, schizophrenia, split personalities to it, so there is elements of horror. But yeah, you're right. I think that was
actually just an artistic directorial device to show an analogy or a metaphor for her split personality. Even in the story, she didn't think she was turning into a swan. It was that she was overtaken by the role.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
No.
We'll go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean,
you're welcome to disagree, but I mean, that's how I perceived it, and that's how I read about it from the more pithy reviewers and analysts.
Now, like, you know, but 2001 didn't have really too many, like, 2001 had, like, the Attic Expeditions.
What's the Attic Expedition?
Like they, you know, 2000. I don't know. Just a Session 9, Joyride, Pulse, Valentine, Ghost of Mars, Jeepers Creepers, 13 Ghosts. So I mean, I think the horror type films have changed, but I think that's a good thing though. I think we're moving away from, I don't know. I like 13 Ghosts. I think that was in reaction to the ghost movies that were coming out, and so I don't know. I'm happy with the current crop that we have.
Sure. Oh, I'm being critical for the sake of being critical.
Yeah, you are.
So I actually have a question about this analysis.
And Josh, just so you know, John has a doctorate in entomology, and so he's done half his life in research. So if you're wondering why the hell is this guy
you know, dwelling on
coming up with these questions.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Also, so he's just watched a lot of horror movies, so that also plays
into this. Just be like, the data's there. Just know that he has been researching. You know, he's been doing research.
He's been trained to tear down anybody's research.
Yeah, like that's why they they call your doctorate defenses. Like, you got to sit there and defend your doctorate.
It's so like something out of Bloodsport.
It just turns you into like a carrion picking vulture whenever you have a chance to criticize something.
And this thing's not even dead yet, and it's getting like a vulture riding
on its back. We're celebrating horror here. I'm just trying to please our forward thinking fans. So okay, wait. So we averaged when you averaged these scores, you had two different critic scores, two different audience or user based scores, or at least anyway.
Three different audience.
But like Rotten Tomatoes critic score, it was typically in the hundreds, generally under 300 ratings. Whereas the audience scores on Rotten Tomatoes would be in the many of them in the hundreds of thousands. So you would average the users and then average the critics, and you'd have two numbers. And then you'd average those two numbers together. So the critics get an irregular amount of weight in this score relative to the number of ratings by critics.
Yeah, but if you look at every best of list every year that people read, it's done by critics.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the critics do set the agenda regardless of what people think. I mean, a lot of people don't go to Rotten Tomatoes and go, I'm going to look at the audience score. They go and look at the critic score. So I do think that is, you know, I do think that combining the critics and the audience scores, and that's why I kept them separate. So people could look at each data and be like, oh, this is how it's different. So
personally, I do think it's more – I do think it's fair to give the critic scores more weight than the user scores, because these movie critics, you got to remember, they're getting paid to watch movies and give their opinion about these movies. So they have a little bit more motivation to give.
But in the case of Rotten Tomatoes – each critic is counted with the statistical strength of 1,000 audience ratings.
Yeah, but that's why I gave two different scores there. I said audience, and then, but I mean, I think that's nitpicking. I think that's, I get it, and I understand that, but I think this is something that hasn't been done before, where people actually combine the audience scores with the critic scores to kind of show everyone combined in this. And sure. I mean, you know what? And so some audience scores, when I combine the two, then those buffered up audience scores did help other films. And they, I don't know, I think that the weight should be equal between critics and audiences.
You mean the sum of critics and the sum of audiences?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. No, I was curious about that. And you know, another, I actually noticed, yeah, it kicked certain things up on your total when I compared the just critics versus just users. And then the everything combined scores. Like, there were some things in the everything list that I didn't even expect to see, based on the other two lists. Like, actually, hold on, I got a little breakdown, I think. Well, the loved ones, for example. The loved ones was in the top 10 of your all criteria combined list. The loved ones was not in the top 10 of neither the users nor the critics.
Well, if you in the post I wrote it that it did not get a Metacritic score.
Oh, okay. So we're giving this one the benefit of the doubt and ignoring that.
Yep. So in the post.
Hey, so I actually don't know about Metacritic, and I assume that a lot of viewers don't actually understand what Metacritic is. Could you give an explanation of what that is?
They rate them differently than Rotten Tomatoes. So in Rotten Tomatoes, they split it up. You know, every critic gets the same amount of weight. So if there's 100 critics, one critic doesn't like it, it's 99%. All right? They do split it up. You can read what the top critics say. But Metacritic, they add certain weight towards the bigger publications, the more trusted critics. So Roger Ebert, when he was around, his critic score would be a little bit higher. That would be judged weightier than, Hank Stevens' blog time that's popular, but not as on the level as Ebert.
I love
Ebert.
That guy.
Yeah, Hank Stevens, he's great. I mean, he does get a little emotional at times.
I read it every Friday.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's what they put certain weights on certain scores.
Okay, now, and I'm going to kind of bring it back,
because I felt like maybe you felt a little cornered when I brought up the number of critics versus the number of users. But in all fairness, if you were just to combine all the ratings by everyone and treat them all equally, because there's so many users compared to critics, the critics' opinion would just get drowned out anyway.
Yeah,
because there's 1,000 times more audience members and users than critics. So it's like you kind of have to give them more weight. Otherwise, their opinions get washed away in the average of the users.
I mean, and they are the guys that, you know, if you look at movie posters or if you look at the new Mission Impossible marketing campaign, they show how high the Rotten Tomatoes is. The critic score, you know, 2 thumbs up. So, I mean, that's always been weighted so much. They don't go like Hank Stevens, before he was a big blogger, loves Mission Impossible 2. They're like, you know, Richard Corliss of Time loved it. A.O. Scott of The New York Times said it was a rollicking good time. So, that's.
So how do you feel about like the oh shit effect movies, I guess, like Final Destination 5 or the Saw sequels? Like, they obviously weren't way up there. I guess the audience got a little tired of them. But people just love those movies, and they all go to those movies. They don't get rated well. Do you think that's just because people are tired of them, so they want to rate it lower than the original on Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb?
Well, I think Final Destination appeals to a very specific crowd. And if I mean, they're not Shakespeare. I do think that...
I agree. No, it's fair. Like, and the Paranormals and the Saws, yeah.
You're basically, it gets to the point with these movies where you're not going to them anymore for the plot. You're going to them to watch people get murdered. And so I do think, you know, the first Final Destination did well. The second one, people didn't react to as well. I think the third one was better than the second one, but people were still kind of turned off by the third one. Then it went to 3D, and no one liked the 3D one. So then I think people went into 5 a little skeptical and thinking it was garbage. I was reading about Saw, and actually critics love Saw 6 a lot more than the other Saws. So I just think that I don't think the Saw quality films were good. And I don't know. I just think that people go to – this is like comfort food. Every year people just go to it. Like it's not like I don't think it's – I don't think they're really good movies. I think they're just like, oh, hey, let's go to the new Saw. Like I don't think they bring the world anything new.
So I guess that was my shock, though. I guess I thought before looking at the list that there would be some of them kind of higher rated, even in, you know, like in the lower of the top 50. But like, I mean, that was my shock. Like, did you have anything that kind of surprised you when you put all these numbers together and you saw your cinematographical brainchild of horror rating come to life in front of you? Like, were you shocked by some of the things that you did see or didn't see on the lists?
Cabin in the Woods, I thought, would be ranked higher. Because, you know, on this poll we have right now on the site, we have over 3,000 votes, and Cabin in the Woods is has 9% of the votes. It's tied with Let the Right One In for number – it's Cabin in the Woods is number one, Let the Right One In is number two. So I feel like Cabin in the Woods is the people's favorite, but yet it's not in, you know, the top 10 of any of these lists. The Descent, I could have swore would have been in the top 10, but that wasn't. I think I was a little shocked about maybe, you know, What We Do in the Shadows. Like,
yeah,
it's a great movie. It deserves to be in there, but you just don't think that it would be in there. I was surprised. I thought, you know, there were some pleasant surprises. Frailty did really well. That made me happy. Joyride did better than I thought. That, I don't know, I like that. Rogue was 100% of Rotten Tomatoes. That's a nice little crocodile film in Australia.
Did you say Rogue was 100%?
Wow. Yeah, but it had no Metacritic score. Yeah. But so, I mean, there were some pleasant surprises in here. The Host did well. Oh, Shadow of a Vampire. I love that movie. That was, you know, in the top 30. That was cool. But yeah, no, I mean, I don't think I was shocked too much by anything. I think sometimes we hear so much, like House of the Devil. Anytime horror lists come up, people love that movie. So you're expecting it to be higher in the list, but it never is. I think it just has a few vocal followers. But I think everything sort of fell into place. I mean, if I had to sit down and come up with a top 5, I probably could have gotten 3 out of the top 5 in there.
So, Mark, I'm going to ask you a tough question here.
Yeah.
You made these lists with stipulation that they were horror movies from the 21st century. Now, if that stipulation wasn't there, how different do you think these lists would be? Like, which, because you mentioned there was a common string of movies that made it into every list. Like, which, how, like, which string of movies would be present if there was like no date stipulation here?
Oh dear!
Like, you know, AFI did their thriller lists.
You would
which
think
is,
Exorcist would be.
Yeah, would be it's Exorcist, list. Alien, Rosemary's Baby, Psycho, North by Northwest. Those would definitely be in the top 10. Jaws.
Right.
I mean, I don't see any of these new movies really cracking it. Oh, I did a here. Let me. I found something pretty interesting. Empire Magazine. Here's a good one for you. Empire Magazine did a top 300 movies of all time, and only three cracked the top 50. So The Mist was 48, Descent was 39, Let the Right One In was 34, and 28 Days Later was 25. So here, let me pull up the list here and let me show you who was on top. So it's probably Psycho, Jaws. No, I mean, it's just the stock ones. And so I was kind of thinking about doing something like that, and it just bored me because it's just the same faces every time. So, oh, wait. Right. A Muppets something was 299. That's interesting.
That was scary.
Yeah, so here we are. So 10 is Evil Dead. Oh, no, here, I'll work from 15. Suspiria, The Omen, Frankenstein, An American Werewolf in London, Alien, The Evil Dead, Night of the Living Dead, The Shining. People kept going, why is The Shining not in your list? And I'm like, hey, man.
It's not from this century.
Yeah. Dawn of the Dead, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Psycho, The Wicker Man.
The Wicker – oh, not Nicolas Cage, the original Wicker Man.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
not – I mean, Nicolas Cage punching a woman in a bear suit is wonderful and all.
I love that movie. Don't get me wrong. And then, you know, then there's the obvious, you know, Exorcist and Jaws and all those leading the top, you know, Rosemary's Baby.
So none of those these new movies would have been able to crack like the top 15, apparently.
No. Yeah. I do think we're in a good time of horror. And in that post I wrote that like they're not like the 70s and the late 60s where we had Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Rosemary's Baby and Jaws and these Alien and these angry, brutal movies. We're not really doing that anymore. I don't, you know, Babadook is rated incredibly highly, but do you think it's going to be a looked at like one of the classics in 30 years? I don't think it is. I think, oh man, I'm trying to think about what movies might be able to hang with these suckers. And I think Empire came pretty close. I mean, 28 Days Later, Let the Right One In. I don't think any of these will be able to crack that, but we all know these. So I kind of wanted to talk about new horror and like the times we're living in now.
Yeah. You know, I brought up in the beginning, you know, there are all the things that people do and don't consider horror, and how on earth would you even just come up with your top five? And, you know, you had to say it, check it at the door and just go off the top of your head. Like, yeah. I mean, I couldn't put together a list of my top five films of this century. I couldn't do it. I tried to do it 30 minutes before we recorded, and I wrote 10 down, and I couldn't even delete half of them.
Take Shelter's number one.
Ugh.
Right, so no, get this.
I haven't even seen it.
Gosh. So, you know, AFI did their most thrilling American films, right? They had Psycho, Jaws, The Exorcist, North by Northwest, Silence of the Lambs, Alien, The Birds, French Connection. They added French Connection. So even back in the day, thrillers were mixed. Jaws and Psycho was with French Connection. And then you had Rosemary's Baby, Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Godfather, King Kong, Bonnie and Clyde, Rear Window, Deliverance. So, I mean,
interesting list.
But if you think about it, Rear Window, Deliverance, these movies, you could call Deliverance a horror film or you could call it a thriller. So, I mean, I think even since the 70s, 60s, 50s, 40s with, you know, the Universal films. It's like horror, thriller. So, yeah.
That would just been a lot more work for you, too.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, some guy made a funny comment in Reddit. Some guy was like, I think Pan's Labyrinth is more of a dark fantasy war thriller. And he's like,
I remember that from the dark fantasy war thriller section at Blockbuster.
Yeah, and then some guy went, yeah, why didn't you make a dark fantasy thriller war list?
Good. I'm glad you came up to defend that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, some guy did that. And I just was like, I love this guy. I don't know who or person. I love this person. So, but then, I don't know. But I also did the major like Shock to Drop, Droid Central, Fangoria, Bloody Disgusting, and Bloody Good Horror did their best of lists. And their lists were Let the Right One In, Shaun of the Dead, Babadook, The Descent, The Mist, Dawn of the Dead remake, Cabin in the Woods, and 28 Days Later. So I think that's probably the closest we'll have to like a true horror list of the century. I kind of like that list that they
But next week, are we going to discuss the top five ever dark fantasy war thrillers?
Yes, we are. We got Willow. I think there's a war in there. We got Pan's Labyrinth.
Actually, Mark, it kind of begs the question. Which genre are you going to do the list for next?
Oh, gosh. I don't even want to think about this.
Or just comedies in general.
I mean,
so just understand the Herculean task that you did. How many hours do you think you spent mining this data after you had already picked the 160 films you'd be researching?
Also, can you do it again for each genre?
I would, but I wouldn't force it. I'd have to get inspired. But I feel there's going to be a lot of copycats coming out soon.
Because there's nothing like this, right? I mean, you may have combined a bunch of things. Like Rotten Tomatoes might combine their user and critic score occasionally, or do they?
No.
Okay, so, I mean, and you're combining multiple websites, different scores.
Well, see, yeah, a guy on Reddit, this is where I got the inspiration. A guy on Reddit took the top 250 movies from, but see, he did IMDb, which is users, and then he did Rotten Tomato critic scores and Metacritic. So he just combined, like, IMDb, Metacritic, and Rotten Tomatoes, and he did that for the top 250 movies. So I drew some inspiration from that. But, you know, I kind of did – I wanted to add more audience scores into that. So I don't know. That one's been done. Horror's been done. I don't know.
I got to say, anytime I ever try and create a best of list, I will be in my research paper citing your paper as the pioneer of the method to come up with my calculations.
Yeah, I mean, it was – I don't know. I enjoyed it. My wife, she helped me out a lot. She actually helped me with this idea. She taught me about Google spreadsheets and averaging everything together, which saved me hours of time. And I did. I spent actually hours looking for articles like this, so not to be like wasting hours on it. And then, of course, you come up with – I had a list of 130, but then I ended up adding 31 more films. And so it just became a bunch of PDFs. And then, you know, then I wrote out the PDF with my – thing, and I had to write a good post that people would be engaged on. So I don't know, but I started on Friday. I got it done on Sunday, and we cleaned the entire house and brought everything in and got a lot done.
So. What you just described, Mark, if you took out horror and movie from that, the last 3 minutes of your discussion, it sounds like when someone has 2 weeks left to finish their dissertation by deadline, and except when they say it, they sound depressed with their products, like it was a war of attrition, whereas you came out with something you were happy to talk about it, which isn't the case in research.
I enjoyed this, and I just think it's something different. My friend Tony wrote me a text, and he said it was glorious. He's like, you write the most useful and unuseful posts in the history of the planet, and they're beautiful. Right. So, like, you know, no one needed this, but they read it, and they like it. Like, I like bringing something different to the table. I guess the discussion we had tonight was good because on all the comment boards on Facebook and AV Club, and I mean, there were thousands of comments about this. I mean, people were going back and forth. They were being pithy. They were arguing movies. So at least maybe it raised some awareness about our century, the films of this century, horror films of this century, and it got people talking. So, no, that's good. I mean, anything that can spark a discussion, I'm happy with.
So let me good. You're the one with a PhD. So I have to ask. Was Mark's dissertation defense tonight a successful one?
I'd have to say absolutely. I mean, my greatest criticism wouldn't actually be an improper way to get to the results. It was just a reality, and I ended up justifying what he did. And that's, you know, how on earth do you weigh critics plus audience members? And I think he did it in a sensible way. And I'm pretty pleased with the result, except for the gift.
Sure.
All right. No, I'm just kidding, but yeah, no, I'm pretty pleased with the result. And, you know, it's like in any research, you find some shocking things in it, and it's enlightening. And we saw things in this that were shocking, interesting, enlightening. I was super pleased, but
I'm happy I got to use my degree, my master's in media communication studies. I haven't used aside from like movies and posters and everything like that. But I don't know, like you said, man, we learned some things. You know, we got something new to show and pass around the world.
I think the response was positive, and so it was just fun to do. So,
all right, guys, I think it's that time of the podcast where we have to sign off. But before we do, I think we have some plugs to do, right?
Yeah, just get on. Well, this should be up on the post. You know, I'm gonna stop the voting in a couple days, but you know, if you guys hear this tomorrow, the next few days when we're pushing this, make sure to get on the site and vote for your favorite films. You can vote for three on our page, www.moviesfilmsandflicks.com. And then check back in. We're going to write a post about the winners.
Cool. All right. And I think that about covers it, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just out of breath.
Yeah.
Mark, if I'm a horror leviathan, what are you? Because you've been writing some pithy horror articles in the last several months.
I'm the horror appreciator. I'm the horror I don't know. I'm like the horror honey badger.
You know what, listeners, if you pop on our website, moviesfilmsandflicks.com, I want you to find this article. It's going to be really easy to find. And I want you to throw a comment up there randomly of what Mark's nickname should be. If I'm the horror leviathan, what's Mark?
Yeah, I can't. You can't give yourself a nickname. So let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, brother. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Kurt Russell.
Yes.
Kurt Russell Dahl, Wrestling Evil Aliens.
Yes. And John Lemmigood.
Y'all have a good night.
From his comfy hotel room. I've been your
American host. Horror Story Hotel in October.
Yes.
Can't wait.
I've been your host, John Lossler. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you guys next time.
Target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark. Go, go, go.
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.